talking about how folks can utilize marketing claims to add value to what they're doing. And we've asked John Patrick here from Torrington to talk about some of the things he's doing with source and age identification and some other things within the livestock industry that he's doing to help increase his profitability. So please help me welcome John Patrick.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want to show you any disrespect, but I'm going to sit down and speak to you. I hope that's all right. This morning we're going to talk about using marketing claims to add value to your products and to put my comments and observations in some better perspective for you. I want to tell you a little bit about myself before I get started. I am a third generation rancher. I operate a ranch in the same location as my grandfather homesteaded 125 years ago. He managed it until his death. And then my father managed it for 50 years until he died. He died about 30 years ago. And I took it over and I've been managing it since then. The ranch supports about 400 mother cows. In addition to that, we also save 75% of our heifer calves and breed them for replacement heifers for ourselves and to sell. In addition to doing that, we also have three irrigated farms and a small feedlot. We use the feedlot in our operation to background our steer calves for a minimum of 45 days after we wean them and before we either put them in a finishing lot for our own purposes or sell them to the people that we sold them to in the fall, depending on which way we decide to go. We also use that feedlot to develop our replacement heifers, and we do commercial heifer development for some other ranchers as well. So what I'm going to talk to you about today, by necessity, is from a background of cattle production. The techniques are cattle production techniques, but I think that the concepts would apply to whatever you might happen to do in agriculture. Before I came back to the ranch, I went to the University of Wyoming, and unlike most of the other ranch children over there, I went to the business college instead of the ag college, and I got a degree in business administration with a minor in accounting. In the course of going through that curriculum, I encountered the marketing ideas that we're going to talk about today, and that gave me the perspective to look at our operation as a business operation and not an agricultural operation. Maybe there's no difference there, but there was, and there is, some difference in my mind. Having spent 4 years in Laramie, I was so impressed with the mild climate Laramie had to offer that I spent another 3 years there and got a law degree also. So I finally escaped out of there more highly educated than I needed to be. At the conclusion of this, I'm certainly going to take whatever time you want and answer questions you have. But if along the way I say something that stirs you up or evokes a question, please do not hesitate to stop me. We'll discuss it. I'd much rather have a discussion this morning than give you a lecture. I think it'll benefit me and it'll benefit you as well. So to get started, I have a couple of questions for you. If I were to mention the date August 2002. What significance does that date have for you? How about October of 2003? How about December of 2003? December of 2003 was the month that the USDA announced the first case of bovine spongiform encephalopathy in the United States, mad cow disease. In 2003, even with that event, it came at the very end of December, I think close to the Christmas holidays. In 2003, the United States exported 1.3 million metric tons of beef. 1.3 million metric tons, had a value of $3.9 billion. We were the third largest exporting country in the world, and we captured 18% of the world market. I want you to remember the number, 1.3 million metric tons. In 2004, the United States exported 209,000 metric tons. That's 0.2%, 0.2% of the previous year's exports. Kansas State University says that that event cost the livestock industry somewhere between $3.2 and $4.7 billion, just in 2004. Okay, what's, in the context of marketing, what's the significance of that event? All right. From my perspective, that event is going to be one of the watershed events in the future of agricultural marketing. The mad cow disease event will be one of the watershed events. I'll expand on that a little further. The reason for that is, from now forward, from that date forward, or from 2005 forward, agricultural producers are going to market either a commodity or a product.
Commodity or what?
A product. Either a commodity or a product. That's a concept that I'm going to return to several times this morning. That, in my mind, is the significance of that event. Okay, question number two. Are you in agriculture to make a profit or for a lifestyle?
Both.
Okay. That wasn't an option, but that's okay. We'll accept both. If you're in it for lifestyle, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're in it to make a product, a profit, then what you do in the context of marketing is just as important as what you do in the context of production. I suspect that many of us in this room have a common set of problems. One of them is we're all production oriented. You think of getting the cow bred, you think of getting the calf weaned, you think of how many pounds they weigh. You go to a town or you put them on the video, all that's production oriented thinking. We don't spend very much time thinking about marketing. We know someone's supposed to do marketing, but God forbid it would be us, you know. We don't know how to do it. You haven't taken the time to learn. It's easy to learn production because you're right there on the ranch. All right. My objective in visiting with you today is not to tell you what I do or to tell you how I've done things or to tell you what anybody else does or how they do things. What I do and what other people do may not work for you at all, and it would be absolutely useless to you. My only objective today with talking with you is to just spark your curiosity. I want you to begin to wonder what you could do, because we all have to develop a marketing approach for ourselves. There's nothing I can tell you about. To be successful in adding value to your product, I think you need to ask and answer a few basic questions. And I think there'll probably be questions about your own attitudes. You probably need to be prepared to kill a few sacred cows. Having traveled that path, I don't underestimate the difficulty of it. Have you ever heard, or have you ever said, it's always been done that way? That's a sacred cow. One of the first sacred cows I battled was to address the concept of counter-cyclical marketing of coal cows. Even back when I graduated from business school, the concept of counter-cyclical marketing was pretty well understood. In relatively free markets, price is determined by supply and demand. It doesn't take very long, watching what goes on in a local auction barn, to begin to understand that a significant portion of the coal cows come to market in a 60-day period centered on November 1st, through the month of October, through the month of November. Once you figure that out, you'll also figure out that that 60-day period centered on November 1st is also when prices are lowest. Because that's simple supply and demand. So your option there is simple. you either change your marketing scheme. We have learned to be happy with cyclically low prices. I mean, there's only two alternatives. But when you confront that question, it leads you to an understanding of much more significance than all the rest of your marketing. The other questions are you willing to seriously investigate alternatives to your traditional approaches? Seriously investigate. Are you willing to do it differently than you've always done it? You've always done it that way. There's another difficult thing you have to confront. Are you willing to be the one person in your area, the first person, a pioneer, to do things different than the traditional way they've always been done? Now that sounds like a throwaway question. Sure I am. But I'm going to tell you what, it's harder to do than you think because of community pressure. We call it peer pressure. Are you going to be the first person to go do some radical new thing? It's tough to do. It's tough to screw up your courage and do it. Probably the third thing you have to address is that you have to be prepared to accept failure. Because when you try new marketing approaches, you will fail. You just will. I'll tell you, they'll probably not be fatal failures. A few dollars one way or the other. But the other thing is, we learn way more from failure than we do from success. As you encounter failures, you'll narrow down the number of options you have, and it will lead you to, I think, a better option. All right. So you have to be willing to fail. A couple of minutes ago, I spoke about the Mad Cow incident of December 2003 as a watershed event. There was a lot of discussion about animal identification, premise registration, traceback methods, mandatory inspection of all carcasses, agent source verification, Big Brother keeping tabs on you. A lot more heat than light there. All of that inexorably pointed to a choice that you face from that day forward. Nowhere in any of the literature I can find, nowhere, is that choice enunciated or defined for you. I'm going to attempt to do it today. The choice that's been thrust upon livestock producers is, beginning with that day, you're going to have to decide if you're going to produce a commodity or a product. For most of our history, for most of our lives, we've produced commodities. We've produced beef. For the rest of this discussion, I want to concentrate on being a product, not a commodity. But before I go through that, I want you to consider the implications of producing a commodity. I want you all to take a minute, and I want you to think in your own minds about commodities that you're familiar with. Not products, but commodities. Let me mention a few. How about corn? Corn's a commodity. How about beans? That's a commodity. How about beef? Beef's a commodity. How about hamburger? Hamburger's a commodity. Of the products I named and the products you thought of, we can all think of one thing that they have in common. Low price and low profit. That is just stuck to a commodity in a way that you cannot separate. Of those products I named, and probably the ones you thought of, we can think of value-added claims, that's what we're talking about today, value-added marketing claims that increase the price of that product. What are they? Corn. Corn becomes whole kernel sweet corn. Look at a can in the grocery store. It's not corn. It's whole kernel sweet corn. Beans become pinto beans or Great Northern soup beans. Look on the bag. They could be French-style cut beans or dark red kidney beans, not beans. Hamburger. What does hamburger become? Look at a package. It becomes 95% lean meat. Or it becomes two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, sesame seed, you know, a little jingle. The businesses that market those products, that write those claims, that spend millions of dollars to produce those ads, don't do that to demonstrate their grasp of the English language. They do that for profit. They've taken a commodity and they've transformed it into a product. In those instances, in all of those instances, and in many others, it only took one thing. Words. Whole kernel sweet corn. Didn't add a dang thing to it. Just called whole kernel sweet corn. 95%, didn't do anything to it. 95% lean beef. It's words. How can we do that? I can't. I have to. Okay, as an example of what we could do, I want to digress for a minute from beef and talk about, for those of us in the beef business, probably the quintessential commodity. About 5 or 6 years ago, if you lived in this area and you wanted to buy hay for your cows, you probably had two choices. You either bought alfalfa hay or native hay. That was just a commodity. And you paid $35 to $50 a ton for it. 5 or 6 years ago, a group of alfalfa producers got together and decided that if they were ever going to make any money raising alfalfa, they had to sell a product and not a commodity. So now in Torrington, if you're going to buy hay, you go to a hay auction just like you'd go to a cattle auction. When you go to that auction, a group of claims are made for each lot of hay offered for sale. I don't know if you've seen the auctions or not. Here's what they tell you. Moisture content, dry matter, crude protein, acid detergent fiber, neutral detergent fiber, lignin, crude fat, ash, phosphorus, calcium, TDM, net energy for lactation, net energy for maintenance, net energy for gain, relative feedback. Those words transform that commodity into a product, and they differentiate that product from the other products that are offered for sale at day. One lot's got higher TDM, one lot's got higher relative feedback. What did that? Just a very, very few measurements in words. Keep in mind that 6 years prior, that same alfalfa, that same variety, was raised by the same farmer on the same field with the same fertilizer and the same water. And it went from being $35 hay to $140 hay with words. That's hard to argue. That's real money. Okay, that's why we need to think in terms of selling a product and not a commodity. That's all the proof you need. How do we transform our commodities into products? I don't know what you can do. I don't know what you're willing to do. But I'll tell you what I do. And maybe that'll provoke some thoughts and curiosity. First, BQA certification. It's free. All you have to do is spend a little time and learn injection site locations and techniques. Maybe you change your pharmaceuticals. Probably won't cost you any more. this adds value. Just that certification adds value, because the feeder that you sell your calves to and the packer that buys the calves from him know they're not going to throw away valuable meat because of poor technique. It's free. BQA certification. Any of you go to video sales, it's right in there. You look at all the BQA, well, some not BQA, okay? All right. Premises registration. Without premises registration, you cannot enroll in a PVP or QSA program. That means that you can't age and source verify. And no, I don't think for a minute that Big Brother's looking over your shoulder. Big Brother already knows more about you than you even suspect. There are several good PVP programs. IMI, MicroBeef, I use AginfoLink. AginfoLink is administered in Wyoming by the Wyoming Business Council. People here that know agriculture, it's an in-state program. If you got problems, there's an in-state solution. Premises registration opens the door to age and source verification. It costs $3.50 to $4 for an RFID tag for your cattle. What does that do? Opens foreign markets to your product. Without that, you're not going to send carcasses to Japan or Korea. You won't. They're not going there. Because those countries dictate that in order to be able to import cattle, you've got to guarantee how old they are. Without age and source verification, that's not going to happen. Now, will someone buy your calves without age and source verification? Absolutely. Will you get top dollar? Absolutely not. My experience with retained ownership in the last 5 years is that in one instance, just the presence of the EID tag made the difference between break even and profit. In another instance, it made the difference between a loss and a profit. One of those was a $25 premium just for having the EID tag there. The other was a $45 premium. That's a pretty good return on $4, either one of those. That was a time of year based premium. That program is going away. Cargill, for example, now says that the premium going forward will be based upon what time that carcass goes to slaughter. And it's going to vary between $1.50 per hundredweight and $6 per hundredweight of carcass. Well, for an $800 carcass, typical carcass weight, that's $12 to $48 a head. Pretty good return on your money. I see a little problem with this down the road, though, that I'll flag for you. As our industry moves from relatively few adopters of agent source verification and those early adopters getting a premium to that becoming more of an industry standard, then I think we're going to have to be creative in how to capture value there, because I think what's going to happen is instead of getting a premium for doing it, you're going to be discounted for not doing it. It's going to become the industry norm. So I think we need to be aware of that, and I wish I had a good tool to fight that with. I don't. But we're going to have to be aware of that shift. I think that's going to happen. All right. So we've done BQA, we've done premises ID, we've done agent source. All that's enabled us to sell the animal to a feedlot. Where do we go beyond that? Carcass descriptors. That's a tough area. If you've never taken a tour through a major packing plant, you owe it to yourself. If you're going to market cattle, you owe it to yourself to do that sooner rather than later. All of you can remember the little calf that you saved from the blizzard, put him in the basement of your house, fed him on a bottle. Old Jake, you know, tag number AA213. When that animal walks into a packing plant, that identity lasts about 3 minutes, and it's gone forever. And at that point in time, the only thing that matters is yield grade, cutout, ribeye area, marble. Maybe if you're going to sell on the grid, what box in the grid you fit on. All of the other things that caused us to like or to know that calf are gone forever. And we're talking about carcass descriptors. My experience over a lot of years of trying to obtain those carcass descriptors, all frustrating, is the only way, reliable way, that you're going to get those is to finish some cattle. Because I had a large hand in that determines what feedlots you take them through and what packing plants you send them to. I've heard all kinds of claims right before I opened the trailer gate on my calves and let them out in the feedlot. Oh yeah, sure. We'll get carcass data back to you. Never happened. I do know some of the best feedlots to get this done for you. I do know some of the rest. I'm not going to say on camera, but I'll be glad to talk to you after this is over and tell you what my experience is. But the takeaway here is that those carcass descriptors are the only thing that tell the ultimate buyer what you've got. What about feed conversion? Are you going to guess? Are you going to say, well, I think they'll do as good as Joe's down the road? That doesn't differentiate your product. You've got to have the data. You've got to know what ribeye you're working with. You've got to know what yield rate. You've got to know the cutout. You've got to know the marbling score. You've got to know that. If your cattle are genetically adequate, and that's maybe the first hurdle, to satisfy feedlot and carcass standards, and if you've collected that information, then you're ready to take what is the final step probably in marketing your cattle and making them a differentiated product. And this part is the easiest and maybe the most fun. Namely, you have to notify prospective buyers that your cattle are coming to market. You can take them to a sale barn, that may or may not happen, but you can ensure that it happens. If you go to a video, all the buyers get a cattle. Nothing adds value to your calves more quickly than having three or four repeat buyers want to buy it. Those guys are business people, but they have some pride too. They don't want to lose to the guy sitting next to them. There's some industry-sponsored programs that you can belong to that may add value. Hereford Certified Beef, Certified Angus Beef, Red Angus Association. There are those, and then probably once you get into slaughter, there are things like Laura's Lean and other programs like that that'll give you a grid that you can sell on if you want to sell on the grid. Those may work for you. Then I suppose, as a side to this, I would ask you to think about any other things you could do that would help to differentiate your product. And remember, we don't have a commodity anymore, we have a product. That's what we've done. Any other things you can do to differentiate your product from all the other products coming to town. Now, for the past 6 or 8 years, I've fed my calves a minimum of 45 days before they went to either the final destination or the feedlot. Now, admittedly, I do have my own feedlot. But my accounting indicates that in every single year, even if I had to go to a commercial lot, that would have been a profitable operation. The people that buy my calves tell me two things. They would not buy my calves if they hadn't gone through a feedlot for 42 days. And those people will never again buy calves straight off the cow. The cost is just too high. If you can find a way, if you can find a feedlot, do what you can do. That's one way that you can differentiate your calves from all the other calves coming in. Another way that's been successful for me is to use video marketing. It's not less fast-paced than going through an auction barn. But I think with the production of this catalog, buyers have a chance to be a little more relaxed and look and see what they want to bid on. That's not my experience at the typical auction. So that's another thing I have done. It doesn't, I suppose every year it differentiates them less and less than maybe the year before that, as more and more people go to videos. But that's another thing I've done. All right. That's really all I can tell you. Thanks for listening to my ramblings this morning. And I just want to remind you, once again, the takeaway here is not to do what I've done, because it may not work for you, but to be curious about what you could do. I wish somebody would have sat down and told me about it 5 years ago. It would have saved a lot of heartache on my part. But I had to figure these things out. And you'll have to figure those things out. But the difference in money is staggering. Any questions? Yeah.
Tell me, I always sold my calf straight off the cow because I didn't have the expense to put into a feedlot that would make up the difference that you made at the sailboat.
Let me tell you what my experience is, and I've kept scrupulous track for 6 years. Every year, and sort of irrespective of what feed prices are, corn predominantly, every year those calves go into the lot for 45 days, and it costs just about I'd say 99 cents to $1.02 or $1.03 per day. My calves, for that 45-day period, after they initially lose weight, they'll come back up, and at the end of that 45-day period, they will have gained 2 pounds a day. You have 2 pounds a day at a dollar what? $1.10 for your calves? That's $2.20 a day. Costs you a dollar to be there a day. You're making a buck a day per calf. Now, I mean, that's just the quick money here, the dollar a day. The other thing that I think you'll find, my experience in talking to feedlots is more and more of them are not going to buy that calf right off the cow. I mean, they don't want to deal with the shipping fever, the sickness that they have to go through, the loss of gain for however long. I guess we're a little bit lucky. We load our calves onto our semi. We haul them about 20 minutes and unload them in our feedlot. If you loaded our calves and hauled them down to southeast Kansas, they'd be on the truck for 18 hours. When they get off the truck, they're sick. I don't care how healthy they are, they're sick. If you can get them through 45 days, then they can make that 18-hour haul. And when they get off the truck, they're thirsty and hungry, but they're probably not sick. Does that answer your question? Once again, and I don't know how many calves, I don't care how many calves you got, do that maybe with a statistically significant sampling of 10% of your calves. Try it somewhere. Go to somebody you trust, if you can find a trusted feeder. Go to somebody you trust and say, you know, I know that we can do these calves for a buck a day, or a buck five, or whatever. Get a locked-in price, not some well-off sangibility at the end of the time. You don't want to do that too bad, really. Get a locked-in price, try it with 10% of your calves, and see what happens. If it doesn't work, it's one of those failures I talked about, but probably not a fatal failure. And in the meantime, you've got a really good idea for the rest of your life what your calves are going to gain in that 45-year period, so that you can tell anybody that might want to buy it, they'll do 2.2 for over 45 days, or they'll do 1.95. You'll know. You'll have some descriptive information that'll differentiate your calves from everybody else's. Sure.
When you put them in there for 45 days, do you precondition them as well?
Sure. Actually, what we do is we precondition them about a month before we do that. We'll gather them out in the pasture, and if we can precondition right in the pasture after a short move, we'll precondition. We're going to do that in about a week here, and then we'll wean about the 1st of October. So the veterinarians tell me no less than a 2-week period in there, and maybe you don't want to go beyond 6 weeks. But we do that twice, absolutely do. That's one of the things, you know, that we brag about in the video is, you know, they're all Dectamax, they're all poured on, they're all 7-weight and blah, 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 blah. We spend a lot of money on. Yeah, we do it. I mean, then you got to do it. I mean, you know, we look at maybe $3.80 a calf to do that, you know, and you wind up writing a pretty good check. $3.80 doesn't buy you very many calves. I mean, you can't afford, I don't think you can afford not to do it. I really.
After you add that cost of the preconditioning,
right,
and the trucking,
right.
Don't have that. But
we have our, yes.
But if you're
it would
in
be
a situation,
yes,
where you've got to go a couple hundred miles to a feedlot,
right,
plus the cost of gain,
right,
your profit margin.
Yeah, it's very much compromised there. I would suggest to you, if you've got to go a couple hundred miles to a feedlot to get your calves there, it's conceivable to me that the person that buys them or loads them out of that feedlot is a couple of hundred miles closer to where he wants to go. And if you think the buyers on the video don't know how far those cattle are going to be on trucks, think again. They figure that before they make a bid. So you've gotten them 200 miles closer to him, you can say to him, you know what, we're saving you 4 hours here. It's a factor. If I had to do that commercially, I think I would be looking at about $3 a head. About $3 a head, because when I do my own trucking, I got to pay fuel and repairs and that kind of stuff, but I don't want to pay myself a profit out of that truck. And the doggone truckers won't operate at no profit. I mean, I know them and like them, but I can't get them to do that. So that's a consideration. And that's why what I do may not work for you, but maybe something will work for you. Maybe you can do it, you know, on your own ranch. I don't know. But I'm thinking, and that's what I want to do. Anything else? Yes.
A little different subject, but about import and export of beef. Why, I mean, we export or used to export a vast amount of beef. Hopefully it's coming back. But we also import beef.
Right.
And I don't understand the balance between importing a product that we have a lot of.
Probably what saved our bacon in the mad cow incident is that even though our exports went from 1.3 million metric tons to 203,000 metric tons, even though our exports went down so dramatically, our imports, primarily from Canada, went to zero. And so the domestic consumption of that product was able to rise enough to keep us all from going broke. And I mean, for 2 months or 3 months, I think a lot of us thought we were going to go broke because the market just went in the cellar. So your question raises so many implications that have to do with the export of caterpillars and cars and jet fighters and those kind of things that all has to do with politics. I can't.
And that's where most of it is, right?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I never have, but I've resigned myself to never understanding it. I'm just happy with it. It's just going to be what it is in spite of me. Pretty simplistic answer. Lets me sleep better at night. Anything else from anybody? You all agree with me 100% then, is that right? Thank you for attending this morning. I hope I've prompted your curiosity, if nothing else.
Thank you. John, we have a token of appreciation for spending time with us. I don't know if you've seen the video that was done, The Code of the West, Alive and Well in Wyoming, last summer. It was a production based in Wyoming, so we'd like to
thank you
for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right.